Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Billed Men, the awards season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. I'm Richard Lawson, Vanity Fair's film critic, filling in for our usual host, Katie Rich, but she's on vacation. But I am joined by Mike Hogan, our digital director.
Hey, Richard.
And Joanna Robinson, our senior writer.
Hi, Richard.
So it's kind of, we're in these weird dog days of August where, like, not a whole lot is happening. You know, we were able to talk about Detroit, which is sort of Oscar-y, last week. But now we really have to kind of wait until the film festivals get rolling in Venice and Telluride. But
it'll be long.
You know,
it's
soon,
a month away.
I mean, it's really crazy soon.
And
actually,
what is that schedule? It's like, is it Telluride first, then Venice and Toronto are concurrent?
No, Venice starts, because Venice is really long, so that starts, and then a couple days later, Telluride starts, and then Toronto happens, and Venice overlaps with Toronto a little bit. So some people do this crazy. They're like, I think American Airlines runs a Venice to Toronto, like, flight during that, so people like do that crazy thing.
And, oh, right, because don't people go from Venice to Toronto, and then if they win something, they got to go back to Venice to accept.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's fine. That's a good reason to have.
To go back to Italy.
Oh, what a nightmare! Collect my whatever they call them.
But there is something kind of in the news that's at least tangentially related to us. Speaking of nightmares, which is this HBO hack that the sort of news about is unfolding. Joanna, you're pretty plugged in with the HBO world, especially in terms of Game of Thrones, which this hack might affect. Can you just explain sort of just a general overview of what happened?
Yeah, we have a couple great pieces about it on VF.com by my colleague Laura Bradley. But actually, Mike and I have like a slight insider perspective in that, you know, the HBO, the biggest network on cable network on television, was hacked over the weekend. Certain things were leaked, specifically, most pertinently, the script for season 7, episode 4 of Game of Thrones, biggest show in the world. And Mike and I actually got emails about it over the weekend from the hacker himself or herself. And Mike was like, I'm scared to click on any of this in case it's a virus. I was like, me too.
Yeah, I forwarded you. I was like, don't click on this. Did you get it? And do you know what it is? It's mildly alarming. I guess probably they got our emails from some list inside HBO, presumably.
Yeah.
That they hacked.
A bunch of journalists got this email. We're not like super special, but I was kind of like alarmed by it. I actually got a warning email. I don't know if you got that one too, Mike, but like, I think a couple days before the hack, I got an email saying like, stay tuned, biggest hack in the world coming. And I thought it was just junk mail and deleted it. But I sent it to a friend of mine. He found out that the video files attached to the hack were not what they claimed to be, which was Game of Thrones episodes. So I dismissed the email on Sunday as being a fake. But HBO confirmed by Monday that this was real, that they had been hacked, reportedly 7 times larger than the Sony hack. And
1.5 terabytes.
That's
a lot of stuff.
It's so much stuff, which is why a lot of people think that there are video files attached, that they might have the rest of the season of Game of Thrones or something like that. Yesterday, a lot of people were wondering if we might see some internal emails from HBO a la the Sony hack. I mean, I think once you bring up the Sony hack, you have to think about the personal embarrassment that went along with it for some of the players, just because of the, you know, their personal correspondence was leaked. So I think there was that concern. Richard Plepler from HBO CEO said he does not believe their email system has been breached, but given the amount, sheer volume of data, there is a concern that there are episodes out there that could be released. And I think what Plepler said was most concerning is that there hasn't been any kind of ransom. We've seen a lot of hacks. Disney was hacked. I think a hacker claimed to have the latest Pirates of the Caribbean film. Netflix was hacked, and they, the hackers released a whole season of Orange is the New Black. But in those cases, those properties are being held like hostage for ransom, and the companies refuse to pay. In this case, HBO claims it has not been, contacted at all by anyone who wants something, so they don't know why they did this.
Well, the other thing that Sony makes you think about is, a foreign government, a foreign agency, right? Like, what do these people want? And it's funny, I'm just looking now at the email. It was from hbo@wpprod.it.soas.ac.uk, in case you're wondering why I was afraid to open the link.
I don't know how they got an email address for my personal website.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't give them permission.
And also, it was from hacked@hbo.com. Thank you. Maybe they created that with all their new passwords. And it says, "Hi to all mankind. The greatest leak of cyberspace era is happening. What's its name? Oh, I forgot to tell. It's HBO and Game of Thrones. You are lucky to be the first pioneers to witness and download the leak. Enjoy it and spread the words." And then at the end, it says, "HBO is falling."
This almost reads like a Trump tweet.
It's Mike Flynn's new. I'm kidding. Don't sue us, Mike Flynn. That's a joke. I don't think Mike Flynn did this. It's weird.
The tone of the email, though, is a little almost like altruistic in a way. It's like, hey, like, yay, like free Game of Thrones for everyone, right? Or is that the motivation? Are we thinking, or is there like a sinister intent behind it? I can't really tell, like, why someone would want to hack HBO.
Well, by the way, the other line I left out is, "Whoever spreads well, we will have an interview with him." Now, this person is a little bit of a gender specificist in a way that I find irritating. But it does, yeah, it seems more kind of like, hey, everybody, look what I did, rather than like, that crazy Sony screen that was like flashing devil horns or whatever it was.
HBO is Falling is like the best sequel to London is Falling that I could possibly hope for. I was looking at, I was trying to figure it out. Mike and I were trying to figure it out on Sunday without like infecting our computers. And there was a name attached to it, which is actually the name of a HBO executive. It's not actually him, but this is like the code name that the person was using. And so I did find a Twitter account that was just tweeting like HBO is falling and screenshots of like root menus and all this sort of stuff like that. And then that was just quickly yanked away. But I don't know. What was disturbing to me is when I was trying to figure it out, I was playing internet detective. I typed HBO and leak like just into Twitter to see if people were tweeting about it, like if this was a common, like everyone knew about it already. And they didn't, but there were all these requests from crazy Game of Thrones fans being like, "Hope someone hacks HBO so they can leak the episodes." Like that was a sentiment I saw over and over and over again as I was scrolling through Twitter. And so I was like, Jesus, guys, well, I guess you got what you wanted, but like, okay, I don't know.
That's what is so inspiring about the internet today is there's something for everyone. There's all the people who want to murder us every time we inadvertently quasi-spoil something. But and there are the people who are like literally just begging for leaks, the way that Trump begged Russia to leak and release all of Hillary's emails.
There you go. My sort of question about this going forward is like, what does HBO do now? Because a couple of years ago, I think it was season 4, Joanna, when hard copy screeners of Game of Thrones episodes were pirated, right?
I think it was five.
Okay.
But it could be wrong.
So it was a number of episodes, and then that caused HBO to say, okay, we're not sending any hard copy screeners of anything anymore. Everything is going to go on the press screening site, which has happened, and it seems like they avoided piracy from that. But now this is happening, and the press screening site is down this week. And so it means that people can't watch shows like The Deuce, like I've been trying to watch so I can write about it, So all that's getting delayed. But like, I wonder if HBO now with, especially with this, the final run of episodes coming possibly next year when, attention is going to be really high on the show, like, is there any way to protect it? I don't know. I mean, I guess if people are going to try to seek it out, they're going to figure it out somehow.
One thing that occurred to me is I'm not even sure that the last episodes would be done by now. Like, they may still be finishing the special effects. Like,
yeah, because that stuff, you know, that can come up to the wire. I mean, sometimes movies or you know, PR companies for movies or TV networks will send out screeners where not everything's finished. And, mm-hmm. they'll say just for review, not a final version, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. So that stuff takes a while. And yeah. So people were getting an incomplete version of their favorite show.
What's interesting to me, you know, when I wanted to talk about this, I sort of thought about like, how can I justify talking about this on an award show podcast? And then I was trying to think of like, did the Sony hack damage Sony's, I don't know, public reputation to a degree that it hindered various projects? And we can't say for certain, you know, we can't like say what did and didn't affect anything. But I know that for a while, as projects came out of Sony, we had these like crazy emails between executives that we could think about in terms of like their awful brainstorming for why this would appeal to the largest number of people and all this sort of stuff. And I think it does kind of destroy some of the magic. And so the only way that I could see this really hurting HBO in terms of Emmys is if we, I don't know, see terrible back and forth emails about Westworld or find out about terrible pay gap in some other project. And we're like, yeah, you know what? Fictional. Don't take this out of context. Anyone who's listening, like, oh, turns out Veep is a completely toxic sexist set and like blah, blah, blah. And I don't love that show. And I don't want to nominate that show. You know, like that I think is the only way in which, because even if episodes of Orange is the New Black leaking is not why that season of television wasn't as highly regarded as previous. And even if the rest of the season of Game of Thrones leaks online, like the videos for some reason, which I don't think it will, the majority of the people are still going to watch it on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a really good point that what hurts it is if you see behind the curtain and you end up being revolted. And look, the sausage is always, it's always ugly watching the sausage get made. That's why you have, you know, you used to have privacy. It'd be interesting to see the chain of emails that led to Confederate being greenlit. I don't know.
Right.
mildly intrigued by that.
That would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of the Sony stuff. I feel like Aloha, the Bradley Cooper, Cameron Crowe movie, that did not come off well in those emails. But like that movie was never going to be a hit. So I don't, you know, I don't know what was really effective.
I just personally don't want anything else to happen that would make the Game of Thrones team take themselves more seriously. Is that wrong for me to say? I would just love
totally
to
fair.
Keep steering everybody toward, this is a fun fantasy show that's super enjoyable on a Sunday night and not like, you know, the be all and end all of anything. And we don't have to all be upset about it all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no,
I'd love to bring a little fun back to Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Putting the game back in Game of Thrones.
The game back. Thank you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I hope that no emails get leaked and I hope that no files get leaked. I mean, the fact that not hilarious, but the script getting leaked for this week's episode, all that stuff was already online anyway, to be honest with you. It's actually the reporting of the leak that is making that fact more visible.
Right.
Because that stuff leaked on Reddit months ago. It's just people don't dive into those dark corners of the internet, you know, bless for good reasons. But like, you know, the fact that every single outlet, including ours, is reporting on it, which we should because it's big news, now pings a lot of people's radars that thing is out there. So, but I don't think it's going to hurt Game of Thrones specifically. I don't think it's going to hurt the ratings. I don't think anything like that's going to happen. And unless we get those email exchanges, I don't think it's going to hurt HBO's brand going forward. I understand why they're like scrambling over this. It's so much data. Who knows what's lurking in there? I don't know. Maybe this podcast will be out, like every political podcast I listen to, this podcast will be out of date by the time it's released and we will have found out that HBO is secretly working for the government to brainwash us all or something like that via dragons. Who knows? Who knows is lurking, but you know.
I just don't want any ballers spoilers. I don't want that ruined for me.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So as I mentioned, we're in this kind of quiet August period, but, you know, and traditionally that's when kind of mid-August is when some of the not so stellar movies get released. And we have two out this week, actually. One is The Dark Tower, which is based on a number of Stephen King novels starring Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey that was really high profile when it was being put together because it's a beloved IP and, you know, it has this potential to be this kind of saga of many movies or whatever, and is not. I mean, it's been chopped to about 90 minutes. It's, you know, coming out in the middle of August. So it's kind of a dud for a recent Oscar winner in McConaughey. And similarly, we have Halle Berry in a thriller that was filmed back in 2014 called Kidnap, where it's just kind of her in a car chasing another car that has taken her child. That's real low budget and real bad. And, you know, so I was thinking that with these two, you know, Academy anointed, you know, actors, movie stars who are somewhat languishing right now, that we could talk about like maybe comebacks from Oscar winners that we'd like to see happen. You know, Halle Berry has a movie from the director of Mustang, a really well-regarded movie from 2 years ago, Denise Gamze Ergüven, that's about the LA riots. It's her and Daniel Craig, and that's going to be at TIFF. So that could be one for her, and maybe McConaughey has one too. Joanna, do you have any particular like recent-ish Oscar winner who you are kind of rooting for to find their way again?
I had a couple ideas in mind. Excuse me, I must have closed a tab. Sorry. Excuse me, stalling while I open it back up. Where did it go? I guess, well, okay. First I want to start. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is my favorite one. I was looking through the Oscar winning actors and actresses and who I would like, you know, a lot of them are doing very well. So, you know, I don't have to worry about them. But one that I thought would be really fun to have a comeback is George Chakiris, who is in West Side Story, play Bernardo. And oh. Like right now, he's making what he does for a living is he makes silver jewelry. And he sells it through his website, which I believe is georgechakiris.com. And but watching the Twin Peaks revival on Showtime and watching Richard Boehmer, who was also in West Side Story, like continue and Russ Tamblyn, of course, who was in West Side Story, and watching Rita Moreno on One Day at a Time, I'm like, okay, time for Bernardo to have his comeback as well. So that was my first idea.
That's great. I love that.
What about you, Mike?
I want to. I have two things. First of all, I recently watched somewhat coincidentally three different Holly Hunter movies.
Oh.
And I know that she's like doing stuff. She's got a show coming out and everything. But so maybe I'm just rooting for the comeback to succeed, and maybe she's not, you know, she's done, she was in The Incredibles, did a voice thing and all that. Like, but I feel like she's not, you know, I'd like to see her have like a full on John Travolta in Pulp Fiction comeback.
Where she's like a movie star.
Because she's so awesome and
she's great.
Can do anything.
Yeah.
And so I really want to see more Holly.
I feel like, you know, people were justifiably buzzing about her in The Big Sick, a movie that came out in June.
Yeah.
And I feel like for whatever reason that didn't quite hit the way, at least for her, it didn't the way that some were hoping. Kind of the way like Molly Shannon in Other People last year. Well, she didn't end up winning an Independent Spirit Award, but you know, there was like Oscar-y kind of whispering, and that, you know, maybe it was premature because it's a summer movie. But yeah, I agree with you, Mike, that like watching her in that movie, and even in like Batman vs Superman, you're like, oh right, like she's the best. And
it's not like she's like down for the count or anything, but I want to see her have like a Michael Keaton type, you know,
nice
back.
The
other one that I'd like to see, I want to see Kim Basinger pull a Jessica Lange in like a Ryan Murphy Let's find a great role for Kim Basinger.
I mean, somewhere in L.A., Ryan Murphy just like had like a vaporous moment. He was like, "What? Why have I not?"
They need to talk.
This? Yeah. I mean, I'm similarly rooting for something with like, notoriously difficult Faye Dunaway. You know, she deserves maybe one at least last kind of hurrah. I don't know why we're solely relying on Ryan Murphy, but that I was like
Murphy's our best.
But like he's good at that. Like
the actresses,
yeah. You know, because when thinking about this, my tendency has been to say, oh well, they should have a TV show. You know, because increasingly that feels like where that kind of, you know. Older actors can get good roles, especially female actors, you know, so that would be interesting. I'm just looking at the, you know, best actress winners of the past, you know, few decades. And like, I know that this shit is self-imposed, not semi-retirement, I guess you could call it, but I rewatched Shakespeare in Love recently just because I was sort of pining for that movie. And like, I really like Gwyneth Paltrow as an actress. And like, yeah. I wish that she would, you know, she pops up in Iron Man. She does Mordecai. She's done stuff, but it's not been very compelling. I guess she has a TV show coming out. But I would just love to see her in some big kind of, you know, old-fashioned awards baity prestige period piece or something like that, because she's so great in Shakespeare in Love. And, really, after that movie, only did a few things that were sort of on that par and then sort of went away.
I hear you, and you have the right dismissive tone when you're like, she pops up in Iron Man or whatever. But I will say, when I was watching Spider-Man this summer, and she's, spoiler alert, in it for like a minute, and she's just so good. The Avengers.
She's great in that role.
She's so good. She shows up for like a minute, 2 minutes, and I'm just like, oh, I want more of that, actually. Please come back. Like, you're so good. I'm enjoying this movie, but I would like it even more if there were more Pepper Potts. So I know it's silly, but yeah, she's really good in that role. Well, I had a couple others that are a little weird, which is like, I was looking at the screenwriters, actually, because I know we were talking about actors, but I was like, does William Goldman have another really good screenplay in him? I would like to find out. William Goldman, who famously did like All the President's Men and Misery and wrote The Princess Bride and all sort of stuff, and was, you know, had a few rough years, but is still alive and could have like something amazing in him. And the other one is...
Should have gave him The Dark Tower. Misery.
Maybe. Okay. And then the other one was Diablo Cody, who I know wrote Ricky and the Flash, and I know sort of some people think that like her Oscar for Juno was sort of silly and premature, like assessing her as a genius prematurely or something like that. But I would like to see a sort of more mellow Diablo Cody, maybe not right now, but in like 10 years, come back with something really, really good. She's working. She's not like not working.
Yeah,
but
she has another Jason Reitman movie coming out called Tully with Charlize Theron.
Right.
And let's not forget, she is writing or has written the book for the Alanis Morissette Jagged Little Pill musical. So.
Delightful.
Well, here's one that's actually supposedly going to happen, which is Jack Nicholson doing the Tony Erdmann remake.
That's right.
With Kristen Wiig.
Yeah,
because
that could be good.
I really want at least one more great Jack Nicholson performance, please. I'm not satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because remember when like Gene Hackman ended up retiring from acting, and you were like, wait, his last movie was like Welcome to Mooseport, and you're like, you're like, he deserved like one like Sean Connery's last movie being League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, you know?
Yeah,
it's just like, yeah, it would be nice for Nicholson to like, I mean, I don't think he went out on a bad note or anything, but like to have one last kind of, at least one.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, I mean, he's,
and Tony Urban could be that.
It could be, because that's a great character. I mean,
it's a great character.
I found that movie to be weird as well as wonderful, but like, anyway. Yes.
Yeah. I doubt that the American version would be close to 3 hours long.
Yeah.
I mean, just like the way that
I like weird. I mean, weird is not inherently an insult for me. I couldn't deal with that scene where the daughter throws a naked party. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that scene was miserable.
Spoiler alert.
Funny that you mentioned Ryan Murphy, though, as like the potential savior here, because as I was going through, I kept thinking about David Lynch, like Naomi Watts, who's like not, you know, she's got a Netflix show and stuff like that, but she's killing it on Twin Peaks right now. So like, you know, if Lynch wants to do more Twin Peaks, I am here for it. And if he wants to just cast a whole bunch of Oscar winners that we haven't seen in a little while, Jean Dujardin in the world of Twin Peaks, I would watch it. I really would. So
Lynch, I feel like he can be a resurrector, but also Naomi Watts, you think she's been part of his like group
stable forever, yeah.
Right? Oh, I mean, he kind of broke Naomi Watts,
sure,
didn't he?
Yeah, sure.
I always think of Tarantino as the guy who can dust somebody off better than anybody. And how about Roberto Benigni in a Quentin Tarantino?
In the Charles Manson movie.
Oh my God, he'll play the knife.
What about Roberto Benigni and Jean Dujardin as fumbling Interpol agents?
I like
investigating the Charles Manson murder.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Tarantino is a great reviver of actors. Christopher Nolan is, you know, so maybe there's mm-hmm. some, you know, older actor that he could bring back in that.
Eddie Redmayne? Just kidding. Yeah. That was a joke.
And she's in a movie coming out next week. But, you know, I've never really been quite sold on the Hilary Swank train. I think that she has two Oscars, and I think that at least one of them should have gone to somebody else. But, you know, so she's in Logan Lucky, the new Soderbergh movie for a little bit.
She's really good in it. Like, it's a small role. But
it's a small role. She's fine. But it does make me curious about, like, she was in a movie called The Homesman that was at Cannes. I think it was the first movie I saw at Cannes ever that Tommy Lee Jones directed and co-starred in. And she's really good in it. And you're like, oh, when she has the right material and the right director,
yeah, I saw that.
The right role,
it's good.
She's good. So I'd be curious to see something for her. She was supposed to star in a show that Alejandro Iñárritu directed that was going to be on Showtime or Stars. That I think the pilot episode was filmed, and then it kind of kept getting pushed and pushed and pushed, and then never happened. So I feel like Swank might be victim, like other actors, of she was working and had projects, you know, happening, but then just as fate would have it, things fell apart. And so it seems like she's just been kind of out and, you know, down and out for however
and
long.
Is her part too small in Logan Lucky for that to be like a comeback thing?
Yeah.
Is that like Winona in the prequel or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it's... she's in maybe 4 or 5 scenes. So, okay. And toward the end of the movie. So, and there are other like much flashier performances in that movie, you know, between Channing Tatum and Adam Driver and whoever else and Riley Keough, the great Riley Keough. But yeah, you know, I don't know. She would be an interesting case to see. And, you know, this is a kind of a classic, but like Mira Sorvino, like she's a good actress. Where's she been? You know, she's kind of the most famous example that people, you know, use when they're pointing to the sort of supposed, you know, supporting actress curse, you know, that it can,
And Marissa Tomei is like, I'm doing Spider-Man's 2 movies as well, so I'm fine. Is Marissa Tomei doing what you want Marissa Tomei to be doing?
I mean, I want her doing so much more.
You
know, and the thing about Marissa Tomei and her sort of supposedly cursed Oscar win is that she got nominated twice after that. So that's like and kind of separated by a number of years. So that's like a good career. But no, a friend of mine, friend of the podcast, Who Weekly host Bobby Finger and I, have had a long running sort of gestating idea for a Marissa Tomei show or movie or something, because I think that she really needs a big showcase. And she gets it once in a while in like smaller indie stuff like Love is Strange or, you know, things like that. But yeah, I would love a really solid prestige-y Big Little Lies-esque thing for Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, I mean, Big Little Lies is just kind of, I mean, Nicole... You know, Reese had Wild already, so she was already sort of back on the radar in a big way. And Nicole, Big Little Lies is only part of like the huge Nicole thing that happened, but it's kind of amazing what that show did for these two women. And, you know, Jane Campion, I think, is doing similar stuff with her Top of the, you know, she gave Holly Hunter such a great performance at Top of the Lake, Nicole Kidman in the sequel that's upcoming. So yeah, these auteurs working in TV might be the way to go for anyone who wants to, you know, so what I'm saying, Jean Dujardin, is please call Jane Campion.
I want Hilary Swank and Marissa Tomei to make a Kelly Reichardt movie.
Oh, there you go.
In the Pacific Northwest.
Sure.
Just a lot of like rain.
Just ruminative.
Yeah. And mountains and rain.
I think that's
love
good.
It.
Well, hopefully Hollywood is listening and they can, you know, take heed on
and
all
And we'll
this.
Just take a point on the back end of each of these ideas.
Well, that's how all of this works, right? Yeah. I mean, I get mm-hmm. a cut for my reviews that are good. Yeah. So. Well, that does it for this week's episode of Little Gold Men. Be sure to find us on Apple Podcasts, I believe it's called now, the former iTunes podcast, and rate and review us. It really helps us find new listeners and to, you know, just know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. One reviewer recently complained about our bashing of Trump, which I don't think that's going to stop, but duly noted.
But it is nice to know the president's listening.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's always great.
They've been very tough on me. I hit them very hard.
Failing Little Gold Men. You can follow us at Little Gold Men on Twitter. I'm at Rylaws. Mike.
Mike _ Hogan.
Joanna.
Joe wrote this.
Katie's at Katie Rich. This episode was produced and edited by Jordan Bell. And thanks as ever to Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for worst imagined outcome of the HBO hack goes to Mike Hogan.
There's something for everyone.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.